Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review was heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the flu vaccine shortage right after this. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed this scriptural principle when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." Well, back in 1933, President Franklin Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. They gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my business school, conducted twice a year here at the law school. To learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now, the number 417-273-4967. And the business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email, send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the flu shots, the shortage of flu vaccine. In fact, because of the flu shortage, people are paying up to $100 to get this flu vaccine by buying it like heroin and crack cocaine in back alleys. I would submit to you that you'll get a bigger kick out of some cocaine or heroin than you're going to get out of that flu vaccine, but then, you know, teach his own. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But it certainly does show fear, doesn't it? I mean, just picture this. I walk up to you and I say, "Hey, for $100, I'll give you this year's flu vaccine." You don't know me from Adam. You don't know what's in this little vial. It could be sugar water. It could be some kind of toxic poison. It could be mouse milk, snake venom, or monkey pus. What do you know what's in that package that I'm selling you for $100? And you're going to go out, stick that into a hypodermic needle and shoot up with that. I mean, come on, guys. Surely there's got to be something in life more intelligent for us to do than to buy flu vaccine and pay $100 for it on the black market, don't you think? Now, people are motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Fear is a great motivator. There's no doubt about that. It's what we use to sell insurance. I mean, you don't buy insurance because you want to spend money. You buy insurance because you're afraid something's going to happen, and you want somebody to pay for it. Well, last time, we took a look at the first problem with the flu vaccine. What's wrong with the flu shot? Well, everything is wrong with the flu shot. And first, the experts tell us plainly it doesn't work. I showed you Dr. J. Anthony Morris. He's the former chief vaccine control officer at the Food and Drug Administration. Here's your tax dollars at work. Here's what Morris said. Quote, "There's no evidence that any influenza vaccine thus far developed is effective in preventing or mitigating any attack of influenza. The producers of these vaccines know that they're worthless, but they go on selling them anyway." Unquote. That's Dr. J. Anthony Morris, former chief vaccine control officer at the Food and Drug Administration. Now, there's a second reason. The statistics prove that the vaccine doesn't work. Listen to this. Regardless of which experts are right, no matter what they say, the statistics speak for themselves. Look back at history. Just a few decades ago, less than 100,000 people were hospitalized with the flu in the United States. Last year, it doubled to over 200,000 people. A few decades ago, less than 20,000 people a year died from the flu. Last year, it was over 40,000. It doubled. In the last 20 years, the American population has only increased by about 25%, but hospitalizations and deaths from influenza have increased 100%. Now you tell me, is the flu shot working? As they say down at the Blue Room, you know, read them and weep. Now, what we absolutely do know about the flu vaccine is that it has killed, it has maimed, and made a lot of people sick. I still remember the federal government swine flu vaccination program, when for the first time ever the government tried to give every American the swine flu vaccine, when the fear, when the panic, the bureaucracy, the medical folly, and the pharmaceutical scandal finally cleared, 25 times more people died from the swine flu vaccine than actually died from the swine flu. And thousands were seriously injured with numerous neurological and immune diseases. Worse yet, many medical experts today now believe that the influenza vaccine actually attacks and weakens your immune system and makes you even more susceptible to getting infected with the flu. Now, in case you're still not sure, let's look at a few of the flu shot's ingredients. Now, there's a third reason. The flu shot ingredients are toxic chemical poisons. Here's what they are. Ethylene glycol, commonly known as automobile antifreeze. Carbolic acid. Carbolic acid is a toxic, caustic poison. Formaldehyde. Formaldehyde is an embalming fluid. It causes cancer. Aluminum. Aluminum causes Alzheimer's disease, seizures, and cancer. Mercury. Extremely toxic heavy metal, kills brain and immune cells. Did you get that? The flu vaccine contains ethylene glycol, carbolic acid, formaldehyde, aluminum, and mercury. All of them toxic chemical poisons. Let me ask you a question. Let's suppose that we're down on the street corner shooting up, and I say to you, hey, listen, here's a novel new experiment. Let's take a gram of arsenic, and let's shoot up with it and see what happens. And you say, arsenic? Arsenic? My God, that's a toxic, chemical, heavy metal poison. Why, that'll kill us. Yeah, but gosh, it might feel real good. How do we know? Till we test it. Well, let me ask you this. If you don't want to shoot up with a whole gram of arsenic, how about half a gram? Half a gram. Oh, you still not convinced? Okay, how about just a quarter? Just 25%. Well, how about 12.5%? How about 6.25%? Why don't we tone it down? You know, we'll just keep diluting it and diluting it. How much arsenic do you want to shoot into your veins? Well, my God, boys and girls, if you wouldn't shoot up with arsenic, why in the world would you shoot up with mercury, formaldehyde, aluminum, or antifreeze? Did you know that that kind of crap was in that vaccine? There's worse stuff in there than that. Those are poisons that your body can actually throw off. I mean, sometimes it causes some pretty serious side effects, but you know, your body can throw those off. But once you have destroyed or impaired your immune system, you know, that's kind of forever, isn't it? It's kind of like death. You know, death is kind of like forever, isn't it? Now, if you had 5 consecutive flu shots in any decade, that's 5 consecutive flu shots. That's a flu shot every year for 5 years. If you've done that in any decade, your chance of getting Alzheimer's disease is 10 times higher. 10 times higher than the population as a whole. And this is partially due to the mercury and aluminum that is in every flu shot and most childhood shots. That builds up in the brain, and it causes cognitive dysfunction and disease. This is partially why the rate of Alzheimer's disease is skyrocketing in our elderly population. These people are running out getting a flu shot every year. They run out and get a flu shot every year. You give it to your children and you give them autism or sudden infant death syndrome. You give it to your elderly people and they develop Alzheimer's disease. Did you know that? Well, I'll tell you, Dan Rather's not reporting on that, but the numbers and the facts and the figures are fully published, and they've been available for more than 100 years, lying in dusty shelves in your libraries. These numbers and facts and figures that I'm reporting to you, they come right out of the official U.S. government statistics. I mean, come on, guys. Who in the hell keeps these numbers? Insurance companies and government statisticians, and they publish it. Now, it's not my fault that the news media doesn't report it to you, but then, you know, the news media, just take a look at the 6 o'clock news and ask yourself, is Dan Rather going to report something that's adverse to the pharmaceutical industry? Look at the number of ads on the news. They're almost all pharmaceutical ads. You think that the Lair News Hour is going to report the truth to you about Archer Daniels Midland, their chief sponsor? Now, there's a lot for you to know about, but we're not going to report it to you if those people that are the perpetrators are sponsoring our program, for crying out loud. You can't expect ExxonMobil to be reporting to you about the toxic effects of oil spills in the Gulf of Alaska, can you? Now he goes on to say here, I haven't even touched upon the blend of numerous deadly viruses and infected animal tissue that's in the vaccine. The mercury alone is a great reason why you should not have a flu shot. Mercury is a heavy metal, and even minimal exposure to it kills brain and nerve cells. It's a deadly poison. Knowingly injecting any amount of mercury into the human body is insane. I'd gladly inject heroin into myself long before I would inject any flu vaccine. At least heroin is made from an herb, a poppy. There has been much research done over the last decade linking the mercury in childhood vaccinations to childhood brain and nerve diseases and disorders. First off, we know that there has never been a single case of autism in children before mercury-laden childhood vaccines were used. Let me repeat that. There's never been a recorded case of autism in a child. Well, at least here in the United States, I can't speak for you people around the world, but these are the numbers that come out of the Food and Drug Administration, the CDC, from insurance company, actuary statistics, and so on, here in the United States. But you can just about bet that if it's going on here, we got a population, you know, 250 million plus. And if that's the way the numbers work out here, you can just about bet on it in Australia, New Zealand, England, France, or wherever you live. Let me repeat this. First off, we know that there has never been a single case of autism. It's like old Doc Clark. You know, he says, Jesus, I looked at 200 cancer cases back at the turn of the century. You had to look a long ways to find a cancer case in 1900 in the United States. Only 1 in 33 people were going to come up with cancer in their entire lifetime 100 years ago. 1 in 33. Today it's 1 in 2. Old Doc Clark said that he never saw a case of cancer in a person who had been unvaccinated. Now, here's the numbers. Read them and weep, boys and girls. First off, we know there's never been a single case of autism in children before mercury-laden childhood vaccines were used. This fact alone points a very suspicious finger at mercury poison from vaccines. In fact, the first known epidemic of cerebral palsy was in 1950 in Minamata Bay, Japan, and it was discovered to be caused by a vinyl plastics company that dumped mercury into the bay. But fearing multi-billion dollar, maybe even trillion dollar class action lawsuits, the medical and pharmaceutical groups have declared that the preservative thimerosal in vaccines is very safe. Even though thimerosal is 49% mercury, the pharmaceutical vaccine manufacturers have stated that there is no credible evidence showing any link between the mercury and the vaccines and autism. But in case there is, just in case there is, they have further stated that the well-defined risk of influenza outweighs the theoretical risk of mercury poisoning in the vaccine. And then just to make sure that you can't sue us here in the United States, we have banned lawsuits against pharmaceutical companies for any damages that arise from the use of vaccines. Now, isn't that just real special? So the medical and drug cartels have declared injecting mercury to be safe. So is the United States government. Well, then if it's a damn safe, how come you're concerned about me suing you? They know it isn't safe, and they're scared to death that they would get sued. In fact, Congress has a big slush fund out there. I think it's around $350 million. If you're damaged by a vaccine, you can get some compensation from the government. There's a program for that. I don't know exactly how it works, but there's a program for that. You can't sue Merck or Pfizer, but you can get some kind of compensation from somebody. But at the exact same time, every one of them is currently scurrying to remove mercury from all childhood vaccines. Now, why would they want to remove this mercury from the vaccines when they tell us that it's perfectly safe? What do they know that they're not telling us? If it is so safe, then why remove it? Well, regardless, no attempt is being made to remove it from the influenza vaccine. And one thing we know for sure is that mercury kills the brain and it kills nerve cells. So I don't think that it's a good idea for children or adults. And even if the mercury antifreeze and animal pus doesn't scare you, you probably won't even be able to buy a flu shot on the black market anyway, because this year half of the influenza vaccine, 50 million doses, has been banned from being used because they're contaminated, because they're toxic. Now finally, look everyone, let's look, including me, and agrees that the influenza epidemic that rages across America every year is dangerous. It's even deadly. But the key to protecting yourself is not by injecting virus strains grown on infected pus-laden animal tissue mixed with powerful toxic chemicals and then shooting it into your body. That's just a sure way to make yourself sick. God doesn't intend and doesn't want you to be sick. That's why we have an immune system. So the simple and natural key to preventing the flu is to build a strong and powerful immune system. That's the bottom line. Now that comes from Dr. Richard Schultz. Common Sense, Health and Healing, November 2004 newsletter. Well, who started this vaccination and why? Where did this concept of vaccine and vaccination come from? The history of vaccination goes back about 3,500 years. It isn't something that just got started here, you know, in the last 100 years or 200 years. I mean, that's the crap that they tell us in public school, but that's not the true history of it. A mere assumption of belief unsupported by demonstrable facts is always open to criticism, and it's easy to be carried away by the beauty of an ideal or entrenched by the overwhelming appeal of a pet delusion. We've had much to learn, but even more to unlearn, and it's harder to unlearn false knowledge than it is to learn the truth to start with. Many people think that they're thinking constructively when they are merely rearranging their prejudices. Well, who started vaccination? It's been claimed by an unenlightened few that vaccination is based on scientific principles and is of comparatively recent origin. These claims have been proved false, first because inoculation was practiced and abandoned as being useless by primitive tribes many centuries ago, and second because Jenner and the modern experimenters in vaccination were not scientists, and they did not test and prove their theories by any scientific criteria before launching this hazardous practice on the public. For many years, Edward Jenner was acclaimed a hero for what was thought to be his discovery of cowpox vaccination. But this dubious honor was later admitted to belong to Benjamin Jesty, who, by all chroniclers, named as the one responsible for the original discovery of cowpox inoculation. Jesty, a farmer, Plett, a teacher, and Jensen, a farmer, were named as successful experimenters in the field of cowpox vaccination several years before Jenner's first inoculation. These and all subsequent vaccination experiments were then, and still are, haphazard and totally unscientific attempts at solving the problem of disease prevention. So before we trace the ancient history of vaccination, let's review some of the outstanding authorities. Vaccination is not scientific. That's number one. Many of the world's greatest thinkers, scientists, statesmen, and even doctors have condemned vaccination as being a crime against humanity. It's a fraud promoted for private gain. It's an insult to the race and a blot upon the name of civilization. And yet this treacherous practice of blood pollution, which was cradled in the lap of ignorant savage tribes who practiced witchcraft with witch doctors, has been adopted by supposedly enlightened governments of the present day and forced upon the protesting population, and they do it for profit. M.M. Gernard, in his book The Vaccination Imposter, says, vaccination is not in any sense scientific. Doctors never know what the result will be in any particular case. They don't absolutely know that it ever prevented smallpox. They never know when they have pure vaccine. The practice is born of pure superstition, religion, and it has been a breeder of many kindred fallacies. Florence Nightingale, the world's most famous nurse and an authority on smallpox by right of extensive experience, said, quote, "Everyone who knows anything about public health questions will agree to the practical unity of epidemics and the determining causes, and that exemption from disease must be sought not by any one thing such as vaccination, but by inquiring into and removing the causes of the epidemic susceptibility generally," unquote. Alfred Russel Wallace, in his famous book, The Wonderful Century, on page 314, had this to say. The successive vaccination acts were passed by means of allegations which were wholly untrue and promises which have been totally unfulfilled. They stand alone in modern legislation as a gross interference with personal liberty and the sanctity of the home, while as an attempt to cheat outraged nature and to avoid a zoonotic disease without getting rid of the foul conditions that produced or propagate the disease. The practice of vaccination is totally opposed to the whole teaching of sanitary science and is one of those terrible blunders which in their far-reaching evil consequences are worse than the greatest of crimes," unquote. And among our most authoritative sources of information are the actual government records, the statistics that show the increased death rate after vaccination was established. The report of Dr. William Farr. William Farr was the compiler of statistics at the Registrar General in London, England. Now let's take a look at the government's statistics. When the government, the FDA, the CDC, when an outbreak of an infection occurs here in the United States, and I would imagine probably around the world, government agencies keep track of how many people got sick. Histories are written right at the exact moment that these events are unfurling themselves. And then they're stuck into very dusty old leather-bound volumes and put up on the shelf, so that later we can look at these facts and figures so that you'll know what happened. Now, we do this with the weather. We keep track of the rainfall in a particular area. For instance, when the weatherman comes on, he'll say, well, the record temperature, high and low, for this date occurred back in 1911 or 1895 or 1946. They keep those records so that we can look at our weather today and say, gee, it's getting warmer or it's getting colder, or it's getting wetter or it's getting drier, or this year it was a pretty dry year, or they can tell us what the average rainfall is. They do the same thing in medicine. It's been going on, you know, for a long time. Nobody ever looks at these numbers. Nobody ever pays attention to them. What we listen to is the 6 o'clock news says, oh my God, there's a flu epidemic and you need to get your shot. And right away you say, oh, I better run out and get my shot, without ever asking questions. You know, like, why would I want to do that? Why? Why would I want to do that? Because somebody told you to? Because somebody suggested it? Do we ever think for ourselves? I know this is heavy-duty stuff here, boys and girls, But should we think for ourselves? Now let's take a look then at these statistics that have been kept, you know, for the last 150 years. The report of Dr. William Farr, he's the compiler of statistics of the Registrar General in London. Smallpox attained its maximum mortality after vaccination was introduced. The mean annual smallpox mortality to 10,000 population from 1850 to 69 was at the rate of 2.04. So you take 10,000 people in the general population between 1850 and 1869. 2.04 people die from smallpox in that population. Now let's introduce compulsory smallpox vaccination, which they did in 1871. The death rate was 10.24 per 10,000 in 1871. And in 1872, the death rate was 8.33 per 10,000, and this was after the most laudable efforts to extend vaccination by legislative enactments. Now let's get these numbers down. Get a pen out there, boys and girls. Before compulsory vaccination, before anybody thought about shooting up, the death rate is 2 out of 10,000 people. Now let's go out and pass a law, and we'll pass a law and make everybody get this vaccination. Now, not everybody's going to do that. See, most people won't do it, but a lot of people will. And as soon as all of those people got shot up with vaccine, the death rate increased in the general population of 10,000 people from 2 to 10 in 1 year. 5 times more people died after the vaccine was introduced. Now, what's that tell you? It tells you, number one, the vaccine doesn't work. If it worked, our objective was to reduce the death rate from 2 in 10,000 to just 1 in 10,000 or none in 10,000. Now, had the numbers gone the other way, it wouldn't prove that the vaccine did it, but it would surely be a step in the right direction to proving that, wouldn't it? Has anybody ever looked at these numbers? Anybody ever told you this story before? Now, I'm not telling you you shouldn't get your vaccine. I don't care whether you do or not. I avoid it like AIDS, herpes, and VD. You know, the Bible has something to say about this also. In Leviticus 19, verse 28, God tells us, "You shall not make any cuttings in your flesh, nor print any marks upon you. I'm the Eternal. You shall not make any cuttings in your flesh for the dead, or print any marks, tattoos, and jabbing yourself with needles and making cuts and introducing foreign material into your bloodstream is not a good idea, and God told you so. In fact, he told you not to do that, but of course, we're smarter than God. As evidenced by our behavior. If God knew anything, you know why? It isn't worth our time, effort, or energy now in modern America, is it? All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, today's report is on the vaccine shortage. The flu vaccine shortage is probably one of the best things that ever happened to America. The fact that you can't be killed from the vaccine if you don't take it. This year may be one of those years that you don't get your flu vaccine. Remember, if you get 5 consecutive years, 5 shots, every year for 5 years, your chances of getting Alzheimer's disease is 10 times greater. Now, those are the numbers that come right out of your tax dollars at work. Now, Dr. Oliver Wendell Holmes, one of the few enlightened physicians, expressed this point in one powerful sentence. Here's what Holmes had to say about it. The disgrace of medicine has been the colossal system of self-deception, in obedience to which minds have been emptied of their cankering minerals and entrails of animals, taxed for their impurities, the poison bags of reptiles drained of their venom, and all of the inconceivable abominations thus obtained thrust down the throats of human beings suffering from some want of organization, nourishment, or vital stimulation. I've mentioned this a time or two, that disease comes from only 2 places, 2 sources. You're either poisoned, or you're nutritionally deficient, you're starving. Other authorities and numerous records in case history showing the failure of vaccination are given elsewhere. The truly great minds of the world recognize the balanced economy of nature and know that when the chemistry of the body is thrown out of balance by faulty nutrition and other causes, poisons accumulate and the entire physical organism marshals its healing forces through your immune system in an effort to meet the emergency and make adjustments to the new condition. This healing effort may be expressed in many ways, such as accelerated circulation and fever, disturbed breathing, intensified bowel elimination, called diarrhea, or mucus discharges to expel poisons. eruptions, pimples, swelling of lymphatic glands such as tonsils to handle the overload of toxic waste, pain indicating the presence of irritants. All of these symptoms display of the vital energy at work to restore normalcy in your body, and it's interpreted by the average physician as disease and something to interfere with by giving poison drugs, vaccines, and crippling operations. Modern medical methods delay and frustrate the unexcelled healing efforts of the immune system of your body. Now, when we read of primitive witch doctors experimenting with inoculation by rubbing the pus from the diseased into scratches on the body of those that are well, we look upon it with tolerance because they did not have enough knowledge about physiology to understand that nature does not produce health by contaminating the bloodstream with filth. Although we are willing to make excuses for the mental immaturity of these backward races, what excuse can we make for our modern doctors who do the same thing but do it on a larger scale with a longer needle? Vaccination has been a tragic failure because it is based on the false theory of evolutionary philosophy that disease is a ruthless enemy that must be fought and killed by poison drugs or outwitted by supposedly implanting antibodies from vaccines into the bloodstream. These mythical antibodies are said to make war on disease germs, but germs are not the cause of disease in the first place and are useful wherever they're found in nature, whether they're serving as scavengers working on the decaying waste products or whether they're helping with the decomposing and the renewing of cell structure that takes place continually in your stomach, that are inseparably a part of the great pattern of pulsating life, digesting your food. For detailed scientific experiments proving the importance and the nature of germs, bacteria, and microbes, you should read the findings of Anton Bechamp, as recorded in his remarkable book, Bechamp or Pasteur, by E. Douglas Hume. As has been said before, disease is a cleansing effort of your body. When you get a cold, your body is discharging the toxins that have been accumulated from the poisons that you have imbibed. Disease is not something to be cured. Disease is itself a cure. Germs do not attack from without. They develop from within when the need for them occurs. The whole framework of vaccination is based on the misconception that germs cause disease and must be counteracted with vaccines. But this procedure can bring no other result than harm. I mentioned this to you the other day. I said if we found a cow dead on the ground with wolves eating the carcass, it would appear at first glance that the wolves killed the cow. Therefore, we must kill the wolves. When we see coyotes, these are scavengers. Buzzards, wolves, coyotes, flies are scavengers. Bacteria is a design mechanism set into the world by the Creator himself. They're scavengers. When a cow dies, the scavengers will mysteriously appear. When your body gets sick, then bacteria and viruses will mysteriously appear. But they're not the cause of the malady. They're the results of it. The coyote isn't the cause of the cow's death. The coyote is there as a result of the cow's death. Now, tuberculosis is caused by vaccination by Dr. Walter James, of Philadelphia. James observed that vaccination does not stay the spread of disease or even modify it in those cases who get it after vaccination. It does introduce into the system tuberculosis, cancer, and leprosy. It does just what inoculation did. It causes the spread of disease. Annie Riley Hale, researcher for Congress, stated that the Surgeon General of the United States Army, innocently recorded in the 1918-1919 report that for all officers and enlisted men, Americans, and native troops in all countries where U.S. troops were serving, tuberculosis of the lungs was the leading cause for discharge. And among American troops at home and abroad, there were 31,106 hospital admissions for pulmonary tuberculosis, with 1,114 deaths in the period of this country's participation in World War I. Cited from Medical Voodoo, page 27. No tubercular men were inducted into the Army. Let me stop right there. Hang on here a second. When you get inducted into the Army, you have to be in perfect health. Perfect health, or they won't take you. They classify you as 4F if you're sick or debilitated. If you walked in and they examined you and you had tuberculosis, they'd immediately discharge you from the service. So all of the soldiers that went into the Army, boys and girls, were in perfect health. All right. So they developed tuberculosis while they were in the Army. Now, let's think about this for a second. You take a group of men out of the general population who are in perfect health. Then you subject these men to all kinds of bad conditions. You shoot at them. You make them live in foxholes. You let them get wet. You give them bad food. You shoot them up with snake venom and monkey pus. and 30,000 of them develop tuberculosis. We look at these people and we say, well, we don't know if it's the bad food, or we don't know if it's the wet trenches, or we don't know, you know, if it's some other cause. But there's something that caused these people to get sick while they were in the army, because they weren't sick when they went into the army. So they developed this tuberculosis after they went into the army. Got that? All right, now let's go on. It was after the blood poisoning vaccinations at camp that diseases of every description developed and were first reported. Ah, starting to get a clue. The diseases in these men were first reported after the vaccinations, but before they got to Europe, before they got the bad food, before they got wet, it began immediately after the vaccinations. Aha, another clue, boys and girls. Another clue. Going on. Then the men were invalided, that means that they were incapacitated, and sent home by the thousands and then dumped on society as physical and mental wrecks. Many of these men had never been in battle, nor had even left American soil. Dr. E.C. Rosenau, an experimental physician at the Mayo Clinic, recorded in the Mayo Collected Papers, Volume 2, page 92, that he found the vaccine serums injected into guinea pigs tended to localize in the lungs. Edward Jenner inoculated his 18-month-old son with swine pox in November 1791, and again in April of 1798 with cowpox. The boy was never very well after that, and he died of tuberculosis at age 21. In Barron's Life of Jenner, Volume 2, page 304, we learn that on the 14th of May, 1796, Jenner vaccinated James Phipps, a boy 8 years old, with the matter taken from the hand of a dairymaid infected with causal cowpox. After waiting 6 weeks, Jenner inoculated this boy on both arms with smallpox matter taken from the arm of a boy with smallpox. Several months later, Phipps was again inoculated with the virulous matter, smallpox pus, but no effect was produced. That's why they say the inoculation didn't take. So on the strength of this one experiment and its questionable interpretation, Jenner based his claim that one vaccination would forever secure a person from smallpox. No time had elapsed to prove whether it would last a lifetime, or whether it would last 1 month, or 1 week, or if it worked at all. There's nothing scientific about this experiment. And in today's modern medical science community, it would be laughed at as being ridiculous. But without any proof or any scientific basis or evidence for its practice, the doctors and the government have adopted this practice, and they have made it compulsory, no doubt seeing the gold mine in profits that it would yield. James Phipps was declared immune to smallpox, but he too died of tuberculosis at the age of 20, which is why we mentioned earlier that what we have traded here with this inoculation experiment on the entire world's population, we have traded infectious diseases like cholera and smallpox and typhoid fever and so on, yellow fever and so on, for cancer, tuberculosis, and a whole host and plethora of other degenerative diseases. And the vaccinations haven't cured and don't protect you from the infectious diseases that you were concerned about in the first place. The reason that these diseases have disappeared is because of sanitation, which again comes from the Bible. God over and over again has told you, you have to keep clean. You have to dispose of human waste. Of course, we Americans, we're pretty catty about disposing of human waste. We dispose of it by flushing it down the toilet, flushing it out into the Mississippi River so you people down at New Orleans can drink it, or you people at St. Louis can drink it. Oh, well, we treat it with chemicals, you know. My goodness, you know, it isn't like we just drank sewer water. I mean, we run it through pipes and we put chemicals in it like chlorine and fluoride and stuff like that, and then we wonder why we have a disease rate that we do. You know, our common sense ought to tell us that if the cancer rate was 1 in 33 in 1900, and now it's 1 in 2, that we haven't done anything to combat the spread or the rise in the cancer rate now, have we? We haven't slowed it down, have we? We haven't eliminated it, now have we? In fact, it's getting worse and worse, hasn't it? And it's getting worse and worse. They tell us by 2020, it'll be 100%, one out of one, will get cancer in his lifetime. Now, you know, at some point in time, boys and girls, we ought to wake up and say, hey, modern allopathic medicine has totally failed in preventing or curing or even preventing cancer, now haven't they? I mean, if that's not a total failure, going from 1 in 33 to 1 out of 1 in 120 years, could you tell me what failure is? What would you define as being a failure? In Barron's Life of Jenner, this is a an author now named Barron, who wrote a biography of Jenner. The author refers to Phipps' condition as follows. While walking with a friend one day, they passed young Phipps, when Jenner exclaimed, "Oh, there is poor Phipps. I wish you could see him. He has been very unwell lately, and I'm afraid that he has got tuberculosis on his lungs. He was recently inoculated for smallpox, I believe for the 20th time, and all without effect." Now, hang on, guys. Hang on, guys. I thought the purpose for inoculation, if I understood this program correctly, was to give you immunity. And I thought he said that you just have to be inoculated one time and you've got immunity for life. Well, if that's true, why do we have to keep coming back and getting booster shots? And what's this 20th vaccination on poor Phipps? Why would you keep doing that year after year after year? Now, he takes a kid 8 years old and he inoculates this kid with this vaccine. The kid dies at age 20 with TB. Well, would you say that the vaccination is a success or a failure? By God, he didn't die from smallpox. Did he? And these guys use that kind of logic, and they tell you, you see, he didn't die from smallpox. So he died from tuberculosis. Now, they sit there and say, you can't prove that his tuberculosis was caused by the smallpox vaccination. Well, they're right. I can't. But it's what we call in law circumstantial evidence. I don't have to jump off of the Empire State Building to prove that it would be injurious to my health. I watch somebody else do it, and they get killed. Then I watch a second guy do it, and he gets killed. A third guy does it, and he gets killed. Do you know that those three people jumping off the Empire State Building, and all three of them, three out of three getting killed, does not prove that if I jumped off the Empire State Building that it would kill me? We won't know that until I jump off and get killed. Then we'll know. Now, boys and girls, from the evidence at hand, and this is what evidence is all about. Evidence is something that convinces you. This is why in a trial, we present evidence. The jury then goes back into deliberations, and they consider what they've heard. And they say, well, what do you think that tells us? What do you think it tells you? Now, the average lifespan is about 75 years. Now, we Americans are living to be 75 years old with modern medicine in spite of the vaccinations. Oh, yeah, we got a lot of cancer. And there's a lot of people that die before they're 75, but a lot of people live to be 85 or 95 or 100, like Bob Hope and George Burns. So, statistically, on average, we Americans are getting our 3 score and 10 years, our 70 years. But, boy, we're paying a hell of a price, wouldn't you say? You know, sickness doesn't feel very good. You know, when you get a cold or you get the flu, you get disease. We call that disease. That's like looking at a bird with red spots on his wings, and you call that a red wing black bird. God, that's real science, isn't it? Red wing black bird. So you're not feeling good, and you're coughing and sneezing, and pus and snot's running out of every hole and orifice in your body. You say, oh, my God, I don't feel good. I'm diseased. I'm ill at ease. I'm dis-ease. Well, I agree. Doesn't feel good. But it goes away. It goes away after your body throws off the toxins. In fact, while your body's throwing off the toxins, you run out and you buy a bunch of Dristan and a bunch of crap and you take these over-the-counter drugs, and it doesn't do anything for you. Think about it. I remember coming in one time from the woods. I was sick as a dog. I mean, I felt really bad. I've got stuff coming out of every orifice in my body, nasty stuff. So I went over to the C&V market and I bought Vicks Vapor Rub and Mentholatum and all this crap, and I went home and I took these two pills every hour, and then I rubbed this crap all over me, and I was sick for another week. So I said, well, you know, I spent about $5 on all this stuff. This back, you know, in the 50s, and $5 would buy a lot of crap. And so I bought all this crap, and I stuck it up every orifice and in and out of my ears and nostrils and down my throat. And when I got all through with it, didn't do jack squat. Spent $5 for nothing. So I thought, well, let me experiment a different way. So, you know, you just keep eating the stuff that you always eat, and, you know, about every month or two or three, you know, at some point in time, your body gets loaded up with these toxins, depending upon how young and vibrant you are. The older you are, then the sooner your body gets jammed up. But anyway, I got all this stuff and all this food and all these toxins in my body, and I got sick again. And I came in, kind of just sick as a dog, and I did absolutely nothing. And I was sick, and I felt bad, and I had stuff oozing out and pouring out of every orifice in my body, nasty stuff, for about a week. But I saved $5. I saved $5. And I felt just as bad, and I felt just as bad just as long. And I said, God, I wish I knew what caused this sickness and ailments. I'd stop doing it. It took me another 20 years to figure out what was causing it. It's white sugar and white flour. That's 90% of it. If you could get rid of white sugar and white flour out of your diet, you wouldn't get sick again. I mean, you'd have to do something drastic to get sick. You can't eliminate white flour and white sugar out of your diet. You'd die from withdrawal symptoms. I mean, look, Americans eat 247 pounds of red meat a year, laced with 30% fat. 30% fat. Now, you're told not to eat that fat, you know. Then you mix that with another couple hundred pounds. I don't know exactly how much it is. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. It's another 200 pounds of refined white sugar, which your body can only handle 3 teaspoons a day. Yeah, 3 teaspoons a day. That's all your body can discharge. The rest of it builds up, and then you get one of these colds or flu, and that's what we're talking about here is this flu. Now somebody comes along and says, well, look, let's take a shot of snake venom monkey pus laced with antifreeze and mercury. Now, what in the hell is antifreeze and mercury going to do with white sugar, toxic poison buildup in your body? Well, it kills virus. The virus is the coyote that's eating up the dead bodies in your body. You got a lot of dead cells running around in there, and the viruses are consuming them and disposing of them like coyotes and wolves and buzzards. And somebody comes along and says, oh my God, you feel bad. Let's interfere some more. That's why they call allopathic medicine an interference. When God designed your body, he put this immune system together over here to discharge these toxic wastes. He told you what to eat. There's 18 health laws. He said, look, eat this, but don't eat that. Now, if you'd eat right, stop poisoning yourself. You won't get sick. I've been doing that for the last, I don't know, 30 years or something like that. I finally figured it out, you know. Now, you can eat a little white sugar. I mean, you can drink a soda pop once in a while. It isn't going to kill you. I don't know why anybody would want to shoot up with a little arsenic. I mean, a little arsenic isn't going to kill you, you know. A little mercury isn't going to kill you. Just take a look at all the people that are getting all these shots, and it doesn't kill them right away. Like this kid that Jenner shot up. I mean, hell, he shot him up at age 8. He didn't die till he was 20, but he sure as hell didn't get his 3 score in 10 years now, did he? Now, remember, when you go to a cemetery and you see a gravestone and the guy died at age 58 or 36 or 20 or 40, there's a breach of contract. Every one of us is guaranteed 3 score in 10 by law. So when you see somebody die before he's 70 years old, there's a breach of contract. Now, did God breach the contract, or did you breach the contract by violating one of these laws in the Scripture? I'm about out of time again. We got one more program we got to do on this subject, so if you'll meet me back here tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, same time, same station, I'll tell you the conclusion of this story on the vaccine shortage. Now, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States on 29 radio stations. And on the Internet, and we're on the Internet worldwide, of course, and we're heard in 75 countries. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, biblical law, from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal. It says my time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.